Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
As you get ready to expand your knowledge this offseason, make sure to save the date for USA Football's 2020 National Conference taking place February 21st through the 23rd in Louisville, Kentucky. This is more than just a clinic. It's your chance to hone your ability to teach proven and effective techniques while connecting with coaches across the country. Most coaches are satisfied if their regional clinic delivers just one or two nuggets of information. National Conference delivers a one-of-a-kind, high school-focused, live field experience that will give you an abundance of drills and techniques to improve your team's performance. Coaches can deep dive into both X's and O's and technique at classroom and chalk talk sessions. Finally, USA Football delivers top keynote speakers year after year. Here's a few of the keynotes from previous years: Mike Tomlin, John Gruden, PJ Fleck, and Jeremy Pruitt. As an added bonus this year, paying attendees can get access to the advanced tackling system and contact system for blocking and defeating blocks following the event, and have a chance to earn the new advanced contact certification. If you're ready to get to work on next season, don't miss out on USA Football's National Conference. Learn more at nationalconference.usafootball.com/podcast. Enter the code PODCAST179 to save at registration. Today on the Coaching Coordinator Podcast, we highlight the series Smart Coaching with Dr. Brian Garrity and Dr. Clayton Kuklick, who are professors of sport coaching at the University of Denver. This was a series I really enjoyed being a part of, and I enjoyed these conversations with Dr. Garrity and Dr. Kuklick, and we stripped away the X's and O's, and we really looked at coaching and really got deep on some of the topics that really affect coaches. And we did this during the 2018 season, and these were discussions I really enjoyed and helped me shed some light on my own coaching. And I think some of these clips we pulled in these highlights that we will give you today and tomorrow will really help you improve as a coach. To learn more about Dr. Kuklick and Dr. Garrity, please check out their bios in our show notes. In this first clip, we discuss having players and coaches do self-evaluations forms at the end of the year. Additionally, we talk about taking a step back and evaluating the program as a whole and communicating with players, coaches, and administration. One of the things I did as a head coach was postseason, I would give my players an evaluation form, a self-evaluation form, for them to look at different aspects of where they could improve. And essentially, this was kind of after. I thought, well, man, I should do this for the coaches and myself as well. So I developed one that would look at all those different things, aspects of everything outside the X's and O's. Yeah, I would ask them about their knowledge of our schemes and those kinds of things. But in general, I thought guys are pretty secure on understanding that. It was things like setting up maybe a drill progression or adjusting drills from week to week and keeping things fresh. Or it might be communication with players and what were some of the difficulties you had over the course of the season with particular players, and going through this inventory or list of questions with them to get them to think about some of those things, whether it was, you know, maybe they needed more work on the player-coach relationship side, maybe they needed more work on the communication, maybe it was a time management issue with guys that they felt stressed out by the way they went through their workflow. So helping them identify those other areas outside the X's and O's through, basically, it was just a questionnaire, a list of questions for them to fill out and bring to an individual meeting with me, and we would talk through it and talk about potential ways that they can improve. Now, I know not everybody does that, so for most coaches out there, you know, it might be on yourself to take a look at those things and go back and reflect on, outside the X's and O's, what were some of your struggles during the season, or maybe where are areas you feel you did really well, and is there a way to strengthen those and get better at those? Because it's not just, okay, well, I'm good over here, so I'm going to leave that alone, because there's always ways to improve, even those areas where we feel a little bit stronger. So getting them to look at a broad spectrum of things that affected, you know, everything outside the X's and O's, and trying to land on, here's a couple things where I'm going to work on these things outside of going to the coaches, coaching clinics and learning, you know, the newest offenses, defenses, special teams.
Yeah, Keith, when you were chatting there, you made me think of that just general program evaluation can help us identify some areas in need. And beyond, again, the technical and tactical stuff, but the challenge is, I mean, as you know, like you get done this long season, you get to, we just like, you know, we just want to be kind of done and get our 2 weeks and then get going again. But I would encourage that maybe that would be like, take your time after the season, but also then come back to that and go through a, perhaps at least have a plan, perhaps a program evaluation where you can identify some of that, those broad strokes of the spectrum or various aspects of the spectrum outside of the technical and tactical stuff, and think about how to perhaps put a plan in place for a yearly annual evaluation that you can do multiple years and kind of reflect back on to help identify areas of weakness for you that you can go get resources and further develop. Yeah.
Well, I know the other thing, as I became a coordinator at the college level and I wasn't necessarily evaluating the whole program, I still would do similar things with my offensive coaching staff. But the other thing I really got into at the college level was asking the players, you know, what areas yep. can we get better at, you know, as a staff and me individually. And I wasn't afraid to ask them those questions, and would start with that questionnaire, and maybe they wrote down a few points that they're bringing to that meeting. Maybe they didn't share a whole lot there, but the point was I wanted them to be honest with me about my communication, about how I organize things, about yeah. my teaching and helping them understand, you know, the different concepts we have, et cetera.
Yeah. I'm just thinking too, there's nothing wrong with, as we've been talking, there's nothing wrong with technical and tactical either. So just make sure that that's clear too. That's obviously what we spend a lot of our time on doing. But I think, like you're saying, Keith, too, as you move on to a coordinator position where you're in charge of other folks and other folks getting on the same page as you, you've got to be an active participant in their development. So, you know, Clayton and I were talking before we got started, and one of the things that has surprised me over the years is how, you know, the off-season growth and development, a little bit informally and ad hoc, and, you know, in other professions, there's a resource department or somebody that is, you know, facilitating the growth of the staff. So I think that might be the next thing for coaching and organizations to consider. Having somebody on staff, like a coach developer, a coach educator, perhaps a sports psychologist or a sociologist too, for that matter, that has a broad scope of understanding on coaching, then can guide the staff and organization and, you know, help kind of keep track of all of the processes that go into this type of thing. Because the new staff person, you know, if you're a GA or a new coach, what you need to be working on is going to be a lot different than 10, 20 year, 30 plus year assistant coordinator or head coach.
This next segment focuses on developing effective practices and putting more thought behind them. We also talk about figuring out ways to provide effective instruction and really teach the players.
Yeah, I mean, I could start. I mean, you talked a little bit about seemingly addressing some of your athletes' needs or whatever, and it's more than just throwing drills down on a sheet of paper and some sort of plan. And I would concur that, yeah, it is deeper than that. But the literature on, like, effective teaching practices, learning practices, coaching practices, the base foundation, it's kind of start with developing some different objectives that you're trying to accomplish in whatever training session or practice segment that you would be in. So for example, you mentioned some defensive individual or perhaps offensive individual. So, and then, you know, you would have that broken down into different position groups. So, and then you would have, again, what objectives you're trying to accomplish in that perhaps defensive individual period with your group. And then thinking about how you're going to accomplish those objectives. And that's basically what you would be doing with the different drill sets, drills. You might call them practice structures or practice designs. We may call them drills again, but that's a strategy to get athletes to achieve the objective. And that's kind of what we're kind of thinking about with that pedagogical strategy. And that could be a drill, but we can embed other different strategies in there. And then the final piece of that kind of framework of effective teaching and coaching in regards to strategies would be the evaluation piece afterwards. So how do you know if you met the objective or determined? And this can be useful for reflective practice. And what we talked about last one would be if you kind of have these target objectives, and then at the end of a couple sessions or whatever, after you implement your strategies, we want to evaluate that to see if we obtain that objective. So that's kind of the framework of effective teaching, coaching practices, objective, specific strategy to accomplish those objectives, and then evaluate.
I was trying to remember the quote. I just heard it recently. One of these top-level coaches, and I can't remember if he's like an FBS coach and an NFL coach, but he made the point, like with his staff, that they don't coach football, they teach football. And he wanted to put that emphasis on the pedagogy of this, and that I think a lot of times we maybe mistake activity for achievement, and we think that going out there and running those drills are going to make us better. And we get caught even sometimes in this loop of, well, we're going to run our everyday drills and we're going to do these every day throughout the season. And some of those things that initially are pretty good to teach some of the foundational things start to become mundane, redundant, and probably not as valuable as they were early on. So how do we start to balance that, especially as the season goes on, to think about what can I do to get more out of my practices? What can I do to make sure that I'm aligned with the needs that my players are going to have on game day?
Yeah, I think Clayton's going to head in, I think, in a different direction probably than I will for on this point too. But one of the things that stood out was that you talk about coaches using the word teaching. And, you know, when we talk about a coach in a favorable light, we often refer to them as a teacher. You know, I like to philosophically differentiate that teaching and coaching aren't the exact same thing. But right. the point is that there's effective instruction, and that in the example that you've given, it's not about the coach. It's not about keeping people busy, just running around, being active, you know, what we call time on task. That was a super popular concept in phys ed, probably in the 80s and the 90s too. Yeah. I mean, we talked about it in school. You got to be careful there, right? You're not just out there moving around, being busy, looking busy, think you're making improvements, but you're really not. They're not performing in the game. You haven't really evaluated it. You're doing things and saying things that are less than optimal, perhaps even a waste of time, and hurting the process rather than helping you achieve that target. So I think that's an important differentiating thing that we're seeing nowadays, and that, you know, coaches are addressing what the individual athlete needs. And it's a challenge too, because you've got all those athletes on a football squad, and then you've got team goals as well. And you've got to figure out, how do I get not only this individual to take the right footwork and have the right positioning and be in the right spot, but then I've got to have communication amongst the different players and got to have a functioning unit, not just, you know, one person or doing the right thing or the wrong thing. So I'll pause there. I think Clayton's got some points too on it.
Yeah, in regards to making those drills or whatever more effective as you progress along and less mundane, as you mentioned. The thing to note is with those objectives is those would be constantly kind of evolving as you go through the season. So they're not going to change as you continue to build on those foundational skills. And also note that some other ways to kind of make those drills or activities, again, linking back to some of the other podcasts, is make some objectives or multiple objectives for drills and activities that could include some of those soft skills as well, those relational things, peer coaching, or having objectives that revolve around athletes being able to reflect on their own performances in better ways. And what does that result in regards to the drill or activity? Yeah, there's probably going to be some modifications there in order to reach that particular objective, if that's what you're trying to kind of add on to mix things up, as if you will. In regard to like technical or tactical objectives from which that you have your drills or activities used to facilitate learning of those things, you can progress them along by adding different complexities to them, which would be important as you build. And this is also adding those variations in academic literature. They would actually concur that those blocked type practice designs where you're doing, for example, let's say it's a receiver working on catching, this highly technical skill, where the ball perhaps is being thrown, where they have their feet to the side and they catch balls from the side, 10 repetitions, then to the left, 10 repetitions. We'd call that like a blocked practice design, because the same variation of the skill is being performed over and over again. And that is actually a less effective approach in comparison to more a varied practice design, where let's say that same example where the athlete may be turning to the left, catch a ball, now have them face and catch the ball, then to the left, then maybe back to center, then left again. And you can see that there's variation within the repetitions that could not only make the drill or activity less mundane or more complex, but it also has a greater effect on learning in general. So I just throw that out there, with adding variations actually has a greater influence on learning, and subsequently it becomes less mundane as a result. And the research would support that tenfold.
In this next segment, we talk about keys to effective coaching and evolving as a coach, as well as improving coaching skills, not just the X's and O's. We also talk about learning and what kids need when they need it and how to relate to them, as well as some of the mistakes we make as rookie coaches.
Yeah, I mean, you really just touched on a whole lot of things, too. And the key, one of the key things, too, about deliberate practice, is, and this is actually how the researchers have used this as a framework to understand quality coaching. Not just about mindlessly going through reps upon reps. It's about attention to improvement of your skill and trying to grow and learn through doing the skill, not just, again, mindlessly out there kind of throwing the ball around. Tossing the ball around or just running casually is not the same as running routes. It's not the same as precisions with a target. And so repetitions are important, but not the same as deliberate practice, to where so-called 10,000 hour rule, and some of that research has been critiqued a little bit too, but you've got to be attuned and trying to get better with that intent to reinforce that particular skill.
Well, when you were telling your hypothetical story in the beginning, I was listening and kind of thinking on, like, okay, so where perhaps might there be knowledge gaps in the perhaps the coach that may be sticking to one kind of technical approach and is missing some of these other things that they perhaps could be facilitating. I think it's kind of intertwined, because it's like this professional knowledge, the knowledge of technical and tactical things, the knowledge of how to teach effectively, the knowledge of different practice designs and structures and how to structure a practice drill and activity that could be more effective than other approaches. And we could go down that road in respect to just different, like, blocked practice designs versus random practice designs. And that's a different approach to creating a drill or activity, but they have different influences on athletes. And that's in regards to the kind of teaching and coaching and getting the most influential aspect. And then you also talked about, like, this interpersonal piece and communication, and that's a part of a knowledge area and coaches' ability or knowledge of communicating and being able to read athletes' body language and interpreting that. And athletes and other coaches, maybe they need to interpret and communicate with their other coaches and their coaching staff and or parents. And then that final piece, you talked a little bit about reflection, and we need to have knowledge of reflection, or what they call interpersonal knowledge in the research, intrapersonal knowledge, excuse me, that the communication and reading other people's was interpersonal knowledge. But that intrapersonal is kind of that self-reflection and knowledge that a coach possesses in regards to reflecting on their own performances regularly and consistently, so that they can turn develop more professional knowledge in those different categories I kind of discussed, and then also reflecting on how well their communication is and how well they're reading individual athletes' body language and interpreting that, what that actually means. So when you were telling that story, I was kind of like piecing those things together, because it was also consistent with the literature on effective coaches kind of possess knowledge in all three of these areas, and it's continually growing in a lifelong type process.
And I know that's the difficult part, that it is lifelong, that when I think of, we mentioned abusive coaching in the last episode, when I think of those guys who maybe get to that abusive point, I wonder how much of that, especially with the younger coaches, kind of grows out of their frustration and, I guess, limitations in their skill set at that point in their profession to being able to help athletes. That how much or what might the literature say on that, if a guy is not developed in terms of understanding learning style or how a particular kid communicates or in the ability to see all those things as his eye develops for the game, for technique, for the fundamentals and skills, how much of that frustration can lead to the other aspect of it that we don't want to get into, the abusive type of coaching?
So I think certainly the personality characteristics and coach's own response to their own coaching, their own environment, and how the athletes respond, anger and frustration are going to be linked together. If an athlete isn't getting something right away, we have to remember that the athlete is learning and developing skill as a process. It doesn't happen overnight. You don't go from learning fundamental stance technique all of a sudden to where you're advanced into pulling techniques or down blocking and picking up different reads. That stuff is a process over days and weeks and months and years. And then the athletes' bodies are maturing and changing so differently too as teenagers. So I think a coach needs to be sympathetic to that. And again, like we talked about last week, displacing their own needs and thinking about what the athlete's going through and what's best for the athlete. There's a term called age appropriate or developmentally appropriate skills. You're not running drills, having people tackle 20 yards apart if it's their first day, because that doesn't make any sense. And so coaches to develop and go back to the podcast we did with understanding coach stress and managing your own stress, communicating expectations clearly to the athletes as well as the team and the club, the parents. So that way you're not constantly maybe getting grief from them as well. And that's adding to the stress. And then I'll say two more things real quickly. Novice coaches, we do know this, that the literature will show that novice coaches often worry about management and control of player behavior, whereas more experienced coaches they're more concerned with bigger picture items like actually learning the skill and the techniques and optimizing practice time and other aspects that go into performance. So novice coaches probably going to worry about how they're perceived, that they look like they're in control. They're going to fake it a little bit, and that's going to result perhaps in some overcoaching or trying to be too stringent and too tough. And then real quickly too, related, and we have mentioned this, but that was more of a psychological focus. The interesting to look at some of the growing research now on media representations of coaches, and that a lot of the movies and TV shows portray coaches in a very limited way. And similar to how they portray teachers, unfortunately, as well. Coaches in movies, when you think about the Bad News Bears, coaches get portrayed as sometimes as drunks or goofballs, or they get portrayed as a Pacino in Any Given Sunday. Was that Pacino?
Yeah, Pacino, yeah, Pacino,
right?
Yeah.
So, you're right, I've got to be Al Pacino now and give another rah-rah speech when, meanwhile, you know, maybe I'm not actually giving good feedback or developing good practice structure, but I'm in the locker room with a rah-rah spending 20 minutes on that rather than let's get some reps in and get better today.
Our last segment focuses on stress. What are some of the key stressors for coaches, both during the season and during the off season? And additionally, what are some strategies for dealing with the stresses of coaching?
I think you touched on a lot of them right there, you know, in that kind of telling your own story. So most of the coaches will talk about pressure to win. And unfortunately, we might have used to think that was just a professional or high collegiate level, but really that's kind of trickled its way down to everybody. You've got at least that perception of stress too, and the pressure to win. The youth coaches in the high school setting, they're worried about keeping their job as well. Then even the summer leagues and the camps and those folks too, they go out there and they might not even feel pressure to win, but pressure more than to develop talent and then to have their guys showcased so that they get scholarships or they can and keep their business maybe going or the summer leagues going. So usually the pressure to win, job security, those are the kind of top work-related stressors.
I would just add, I mean, I have some similar experiences as you, Keith, but by the time you get out to the field, that's like the really exciting time, but you have so many other things that are going on before that. There's athletes getting to class, managing different issues. But the key thing for me, I think, is why this is an important topic that perhaps coaches may not recognize or realize, and I certainly didn't realize it until you look at some of the literature on how coaches are impacted by stress in regards to their performance as well. So if you think about all the decisions coaches need to make during games, during practices, their observations that they're making of technical skills, of tactics produced by the other team, or just in practice,
their decisions they make regarding what to do with a particular athlete in regards to maybe a pedagogical strategy. Those are all performance decisions that coaches need to make. But we also see in the literature that the more stressed coaches are, the more impaired they are in regards to making those decisions. So we can think of it in such a way that stress impacts the decisions that coaches are making and can also have implications on outcomes in regards to winning and losing and also regards to individual athlete performance as well.
When I look at the stress building up over time, I'm sure I've had it at some point in my career. I know I was talking to a friend recently. Season's not going so well. They've started out 0-3 on the season, and he's been at some really big places. He's coached and done really well, but this particular job, it's a lot more on his plate. He says, man, I think I'm burned out. I think I'm looking to retire from coaching. And this is in week 3. He's telling me that kind of stuff. I guess when you look at all those things building up over time, I think some of it is maybe you don't have the strategies to deal with all those things, that it starts to accumulate. So with that in mind, what would you say are some strategies to help every single coach in dealing with stress so that you don't get to the point where you're saying, man, maybe it's time to hang this up?
That's a great point. And actually, too, one of the things I think now is a great time to point out in the academic literature, burnout is an interesting concept. You know, we think about, just like you described it, that this coach is over it, that he's reached his end, probably got some physiological and psychological fatigue. And you got to go, do we strengthen his resilience and coping skills, or do we also change the environment, or really both? So we got to be mindful that what's causing that? Is it an individual weakness, or is it that after right so many years and so many pressures and too many responsibilities and maybe things that aren't really filling, that environment perhaps needs to be changed? Tuesday, coach is watching film. Do you really need to watch film for 8 hours straight at least? Can there be a way to break that up or to integrate a little bit of fun or enjoyment or some humor and self-talk involved with that, so it's not just a grind? I personally only coached football a couple of years, and I didn't script plays. I wasn't calling plays, but I hated watching film personally. Didn't enjoy it hardly at all, and I don't enjoy thinking about plays and scripting that stuff very much either. So what can you do with that? And, you know, one is, again, maybe then I'm not cut out for it. I'm not meant to be that guy, so I don't go into that role. The coach that you're looking at, can the head coach or can this coach then change the environment so he doesn't want to or feel like he's burned out? Then for this coach, I'll pause for a second, but then I'll shift to like more individual level responses and maybe strategies for this particular coach too, to think about it.
Yeah, the only thing I would add would be just different strategies. So I think it was critical that you mentioned talking about like rechanging the environment, and that's kind of one strategy in itself, but then also the individual strategies, which we'll piggyback on. So I guess I would drill down on what changing that environment is, and that's maybe taking some breaks, also engaging in a healthy lifestyle as well. I mean, you know, the physiological and the mental components are also taxing, but we also know that regular exercise is a stress reducer. So maybe you can change the environment by maybe getting some exercise in while you're maybe watching film, if you have to be put in a situation where you're watching a lot of it. Breaking up the routine, how else would you change the environment? What else are you thinking there?
Well, I mean, with this guy, I think he's got to have a talk then. You know, and one of the things I wrote down here was too many or ambiguous expectations. You don't know what you're supposed to be doing, or you've got too many things to do. You got to go to the head coach or the decision maker there and have an honest conversation about it and say, hey, look, this is where I'm at. I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to be doing. I've got too much on my plate right now. Is there anything we can do? And I would hope then the environment, the head coach, would start to kind of troubleshoot that as well. And think, you know what, if I want this guy on my staff and I want to support him, what do I need to do? Right? Yes, that could lead to different problems in other people. And now you've got expectations for different people maybe. But that's part of the nature of leading and managing an organization, is that you've got people that are different at different points in their lives. And you try to support everybody rather than perhaps run everybody out or just run them into the ground until they get burned out. So I think this guy's got to have a talk about that.
Well, I think that brings up an interesting point, Brian, that number one, I think it takes a lot of courage to be in that situation where you would step up and go to the AD and say, hey, we need to look at this, and maybe we need to manage some expectations or maybe take some of my workload away. There's a number of different reasons that it can happen. But I think in general, head coaches especially are going to trend more towards keeping those thoughts inside, letting those build up, letting the maybe that turn into anxiety or something else manifest in different ways when you just keep holding that in. And I think thinking back to my head coaching days, even when you have that group of guys you're tight with, they don't necessarily understand all the things that you go through as a head coach. So I think having a network of head coaches, probably one of the best things that happened to me is I coached in our state's All-Star game and I met a few guys there who we sat down and talked and were honest with each other rather than always being competitive. Like we were in a lot of the same situations and had a lot of the same things we were dealing with. And having that network, that group of guys to bounce ideas off really helped me in that regard as well.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because one of the things that is important to kind of reducing stress or mental health issues and stigma is normalizing it a bit. And that's actually what we talk about a lot with our college. Is trying to normalize the conversation and be open about that. And it happens at times in coaching, you know, more like what you just described, rather than the formal coach meeting, all staff meeting. Guys get together and they can really kind of say like, hey, do you guys ever get stressed out about these things? Or what do you guys do about this stuff? And the head coach too, you're on more of an island because there's fewer guys that have had that position and they really kind of will understand and empathize with that experience. But then it made me think, too, in preparing for today, Clayton and I did a research study a couple of years ago about his coaching experience. I'll let him speak to it right now. That'd be great.
Yeah, but basically, it was very similar. It was a little bit formalized, but it was basically a learning community where we just kind of met each week and talked about different problems that I was facing during that week of coaching. And one of the key findings from after doing, you know, regular, consistent one, they were probably about 30 minute just chats, meetings, talking about different problems they were facing, that one of the outcomes was not only was they more efficient in solving practical coaching problems, but also an extreme decrease in stress. All of those things, the stressors that we were talking about were building, but as a way of just talking throughout some of the problems that were causing this stress was a great reducer in actual stress. And it actually enhanced my performance as a coach because I felt a little bit more free. I wasn't so bottled up the anxiety and the nervousness and the stress that I was making better coaching decisions, better observations. But it's great that you brought up that networking piece. So, I mean, that's another way of changing in the environment, being a little bit more vulnerable and going to talk with maybe another coach that's not in your immediate competitive environment, someone else from another area in the country, perhaps, or ex-coach, perhaps, that you might have worked with previously that may not be current situation that you can kind of vent to and talk about practical coaching problems to reduce that stress.
Thanks for tuning in today for the Best of Smart Coaching Part 1. Join us tomorrow for Part 2 of Smart Coaching. Follow me on Twitter at Coach K Grabowski. Follow Brian Garrity at Dr. Garrity. That's G-E-A-R-I-T-Y. And follow Clayton at D-R-K-U-K-14. Check out what we're doing on our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. And check out our systems for tackling, blocking, and defeating blocks at footballdevelopment.com.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.